All right. Thank you so much. Good evening. This is the September 9th meeting of the WPFW Relocation Committee. I'm Kamal Harris, chair of the committee, and we will call the roll.
Uh-oh. I need a moment for that.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't have it ready.
No worries.
I will in a second. I should go to the actual list. Sorry. Finance Committee, FC members, here we go. Okay, so today is 9-9-4. All right, Kamal Harris.
Present.
Julie Hewitt. Not yet. Sabu Hikim.
Present.
Tony Leon, Kathleen Malloy, here comes Julie, Eileen Rosen, yes, Lewis Wolf, no, Miyuki is here.
Yes, I am.
I just see that person like, back to you.
What? Sorry, who's speaking?
Yeah.
Julie, I'm going to mark you as present.
I am here.
So you are. Okay, and Dennis Williams, our LSB chair, told us he cannot make it tonight. So, that's it. And you think Tony will be coming along?
Yeah, he's definitely going to be here. He's involved in some of the cleanup on the mass committee. So gotcha. He should be here shortly.
Alrighty. All right.
Great. Thank you so much. If you want to go ahead and, let me read the agenda here.
Okay. I think I can just stick it in the, where'd it go? Putting it in chat for people.
Okay. All right. Our agenda this evening is 1, to convene the meeting. 2 is our roll call for 1 minute. Number 3 is to approve the agenda, 5 minutes. Number 4 is the August financial activity presentation by our interim general manager, Miyuki Williams, 30 minutes. Number 5 is a budget preparation discussion for 60 minutes. Number 6 is questions for 10 minutes, and we expect to adjourn since we're late, 7:30 start, so we'll add 30 minutes. So now our adjourning time is approximately 9 p.m. Are there any additions, subtractions to the agenda as read? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move forward with our agenda, and we're at number, we'll consider the agenda approved, and we're at number 4, August financial activity, and Miyuki Williams is here to give us a quick summary of what the station did in the month of August. Welcome, Miyuki, and there's Tony. He's here. Great.
Hey, folks.
Hey, Tony.
Mark is present.
For those of you we had the summer fund drive, a 2-week fund drive. We raised about $178,000, despite the fact that there was a cyber attack and that they took out our streaming. They interfered with our ability to broadcast on air, and we were unable to access our phones and our internet in the offices for a period of time. Despite all that, we made $178,000. That includes on-air pledges as well as an addition, and then includes all pledges via our pledge system, including money from PayPal and Cash App. Cash App is not yet integrated into our system yet, so it's separate, but the total came to about $178,000. With the funding that we received, I was able to pay off some major debt. We had, owed $3,400 to Magnolia Plumbing. That was a bill from January of 2024. They came in to evaluate our HVAC system, and they determined that it wasn't any good, that it needed an additional $20,000 or more of work to fix it. And, they had an outstanding bill of $3,400. I was threatened with collections on August 1st. I asked her if we could just pay half that day and then pay the rest once the drive was in full swing, which she allowed me to do. So they paid, I paid a complete, I paid them in full $3,400. Pepco, we had a monthly bill of only about $9,000. However, there was outstanding bill carried over from previous month of over $20,000. So through the course of August, I paid the full amount. I paid $2,000, then I paid $5,000, I paid $20,000. So we don't owe Pepco any back electricity bill. We only owe them now this month, or rather for August, which was only $4,000, in part due to the fact that Mo has been reducing our transmitter power. So that's a significant reduction considering especially how hot it has been. And so we cannot sustain keeping the tower broadcasting it lower forever, but it has saved a significant amount of money. Mo has said in the past the summer bills have been as high as $15,000, so we're one third or less of that. BMI, which is our contracting, I was told initially that that was something that John would be taking care of. However, I received the bill and I spoke to the gentleman from BMI. He said, no, we had to pay and I had to make a payment of $2,000 for that. We still owe $4,000. I've gone back to make another payment on it, a smaller payment on it. I don't want to pay the full $4,000 yet, but I'm not unable to do so in their system right now, but I will take care of that this week. We pay the tower $18,697. That's about 3 months of payment, some with late fees. For some reason, I am unable to contact a person directly. I don't know if you recall back in April when I first undertook the job, there were people who dealt with the okay. The person who previously had dealt with the billing for the WAMU and with us was Rift. And so the person who has taken over seems to be a bit overwhelmed and has not got back to me with specifics. But right now we're caught up with the tower except for this month now, September. I paid our telecommunications, their full amount, and again, their monthly payment.
I'm going to mute whoever just joined with the last three digits, 913. I'm going to mute you because you're making kind of a racket back there.
So I paid them, so we're full up to them except for September. And Telerep, for the course of the drive, cost us $27.45, which is a significant reduction because we were able to have live volunteers answer the phones this time. In the past, the phone bills have been, Telerep has been as high as $9,000. And so it's, cut down significantly and that was paid. And, that's where we are in terms of the major payments. The rest of, I've been trying to figure out prioritizing bills to pay for September. Verizon was an issue because, working with Mo, trying to get clarity, we have three Verizon accounts, and they were, one was a complete mystery. It took me a long time to figure out what it was that we owed them, and they were going to cut off, and it was not even clear who they were. But anyway, so that was also taken care of the last week of August. And I still owe the other two, because I'm trying to figure out, I'm working with Mo and Frenchie, the other engineer, to figure out how we can consolidate or lower the number of phone and internet payments that we are doing. Because whatever we're paying, according to Markeisha, who does sees overall bills of everyone, we're paying significantly more than anybody else. And so we're trying to reduce those. But meanwhile, we can't afford to get cut off. And again, there's no clarity in terms of which accounts cover what sometimes. So I have to continue paying those so that we don't get in any more trouble with that or risk going off the air, losing internet connection. The cyber attack did cost us money. I filed with the FBI as well as the FCC. I put in a claim for $20,000, whether they'll address that or not, I don't know. But they calculated to have the cyber attack. When Mo was out of town, he was covering the Democratic National Convention. And on the Friday, Saturday, when we had the most listeners on the streaming was taken completely off. Friday nights and Saturday day are the times we have the most listeners on the stream. And so when I filed with the FBI, I filed a claim saying that, you know, if we can claim anything, that it'd be $20,000. or so. And I don't know how that's turning out. The FBI has not followed up with me. They told me they would call me, and that was almost a month ago now. They have yet to call me. So I'm following up with them this week to find out what the status is of the cyber attack, whether they were able to identify anybody or if they can find anyone. But I don't know. I also asked whether or not my understanding is our insurance for WPFW for the station is only liability. So I don't know if there's any claim we could put in with any insurance or anything to cover the money that we potentially lost. I think that's it, unless anyone has any questions.
Thank you, Miyuki. Yeah, we'll take a stack from anybody who might have a question for our IGM. And I've got Tony Leon and Sabu. So, Tony, your hand was first. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. The Verizon accounts, you said they had three accounts with Verizon. What's the difficulty in trying to ascertain what these accounts do?
Okay, so even calling, I think I told you, Tony, a long time ago that the files were deleted. So I don't have email access, or I didn't have email access to certain bills and stuff. There's one account did not produce paper billing, because for whatever reason was paper billing was discounted, and the account was so old, they don't even have online billing. So I had to track them down. It was not just one or two phone calls and waiting for hours and hours for Verizon to get back or pick up. But anyway, so I finally got through and determined that that was an old bill, and I thought it was $3,000 for per month, but it was actually only just $3,000 for over a period of time. It had not been paid for months and months and months. So I'm still in the process. Again, Mo and Jerry set things up, and they're the only ones who know absolutely which lines are for which. And so we met last week trying to get some definition, and you know, two weeks previous, getting some information. That's how we were able to get that information. The other two accounts, one is for the offices at 1990. The other is for the transmitter, internet at the transmitter, as well as the phone, having a phone there. So again, the idea of consolidating, because we have a lot of course, now with the cyber attack, we need to have other options when one of the services go out, which is why we also have ARC Telecom. So we have four different sources of internet and phone that we need to consolidate that they're working on. And so the other thing is, when these things were set up, it was set up for an office full of people. They had, for example, the phones. We have, I think, I'm sorry, I can't tell you the exact number, but maybe 10 or 11 phones, because there's a GM phone. There is a phone for the development. There's a phone for the PD. There's an access for the engineer. So there's all these multiple phones that we're not obviously currently using right now. And so we have to get rid of some of those. And so that will help cut down costs. But this was set up pre-COVID, pre-everyone not being in the office. You know, there was a reception for all those things. So we have to taper those things down. Again, it's not anything I can do by myself, because I don't know which lines just absolutely cut off and all of a sudden we don't have on-air phones or something, but something working toward an understanding and getting clarity on. So that's where we are.
So what I heard you say was you have three accounts. You've identified one for the tower that goes to the tower. You've identified another one that's for the phone numbers that used to be, and some are still all working in the 1990K. And then there's another one that's an old one that you're having a problem trying to identify.
That one, yes, they're supposed to be sending me, and actually now that you mentioned it, it was over 2 weeks ago, they're going to start sending me a hard copy bill, because wow. There was just nothing there. They would just send, I received letters when it went to collection. And I just took care of it then. That one, I asked Mo about whether I could disconnect. At that point, he said no, but we're working on that one. One set of Verizon phones take care of all the phones, 202-588-0999. Right. I'm sorry, 202-588-0893, the on-air phones, mm-hmm. All right? The other set, Telarc takes care of with the 202-588-9739, the call-in phone numbers and things like that. The other Verizon phone, is for 202-588-0999. And again, working with Mo to consolidate and lowering all those.
So the one that, the oldest one, you don't get a bill so to make a payment on. How do you know that you owe money on that?
They send me collection letters. They sent me a collection letter.
And the collection letter usually has an account that it's associated with, doesn't it?
Yes. So okay. I've been able to produce it now, Tony. I have it now, but I didn't have it up to that time. They've given me the paperwork for the past 2 years.
Okay, you have it now. Okay, and then my last question is, you put a $20,000 claim into the FBI. They have some kind of fund for these attacks, or how do you expect to get?
I just registered that as a loss. They ask you what the loss was. So I put that there in hopes that I didn't realize that our insurance was just liability. Anytime you do a claim, an insurance claim, you have to have either a police report or something substantiating the fact that whatever your loss is. So I put it in with that, with the hopes that we had comprehensive insurance. We do not.
Understand. Okay, then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Tony. The term for the type of insurance we're talking about there, it's called business interruption.
Is what
that is. So that $20,000 would be a claim, for business interruption. All right. So we know. Sabu, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to, Tony, just, you know, put out what I was going to ask. So that was answered. One or two other things real quick while I have you. And I said something to Benny about this. The 5K is coming up. And I noticed that years ago, we gradually were like a turtle, I guess. At one point, we didn't even have a swipe card, which was ridiculous to me. I carried on with Jerry and Staria when I came back in the country. So they finally had gotten one. They got two of them. Okay, so I'm usually at some of the functions that we do, you know, this card swipe. I have observed over a period of time that we need to step up and do one more connection with that, and that's a tablet. I asked Vinny to ask you about if it's possible that we get two tablets, definitely one, so that when we're at the functions, the Blues Festival or whatever, we have that, people don't use their phones. People are using their personal phones. Okay. That even went on with the previous GM. I guess he had a straight account, but there should be an account that we get it doesn't happen to be an expensive tablet. I told, many that if we didn't have one, that I would get one and just, you know, I would write it off on tax thing, you know, but we need that because people are using their personal phones, which I think personally is not cool. You know, there should be just, if it's just a tablet, we have a count on there, one or two, that's it. But that goes with the card swipe, you know, and it's just not recently, but I remember a couple other Blues Festivals where other members of the community were there and they were using their phone to card swipe for money to go into, and that was not. So it's been an ongoing issue. So if there's an issue with that, I can hustle up at least one tablet so that we can use professionally. So, you know, we're getting there. Used to write people's information down on paper, which I thought was off, so if we can do that, would, you know, help us a lot, you know, as far as looking like we've got something going on.
I was not aware of that. I appreciate that very much, Sabu. That's a great idea. I am not spending any extra funds on anything. The only thing I spent extra PFW funds on are a $15 a month Zoom for the news department because I thought that was critical. Anything extra, I'm still, I'm going into month six. I'm still assessing and trying to figure out everything in terms of priority and what the spending that is needed and those type of things. If you can donate a tablet, I think I can have one that I can also donate. That could be two tablets. that we can have for them. But otherwise, I don't have the extra additional funds to, and then we'd have to pay for internet connection for those. But I think it's a great idea. I don't know if we can get it together for this Saturday, but it's something that certainly that we should shoot for. And I'll look to see if I can donate the one I have.
And one other thing too, in talking to staff, I understand that we're starting the process of packing, that, you know, we're starting to pack up. So I asked them, did they have what supplies, which we have none. So I suggested that I could also get maybe boxes and those containers, like, you know, those little, I used one, I did some hydroponics one time. And so they're black with the yellow top, you know, you can, they're pretty, so to get a couple of those so that you can at least get started, you know, cause you gotta, you know, so he said he didn't have, so I was gonna work on that. So since I got you, you know, also want a receipt, like, you know, donation kind of thing. So I can write that off. So.
Sabu, thank you for always thinking ahead and thinking of those kind of things. Really appreciate that. That would be very helpful.
All right. Thank you, Sabu. Anybody else with a question for Miyuki? Going back, I have one question. Going back to the Magnolia, that was, even though it's Magnolia Plumbing, that was an HVAC situation, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, HVAC.
Came back in January to assess our HVAC problem. Basically said our it's a big problem. It's going to cost us a whole lot more money to do anything. But that's how it took them all day. Cause I said, what am I paying for? Cause I went, you know, I didn't have anything to do with it. And there wasn't any specific billing. When I spoke to him, he said that they informed the former manager that there was a problem, that it would cost a lot of money even just to identify it. And so that was the cost of just telling them that it was going to cost X thousand dollars more to do anything. And it was confirmed. I had as soon as I came in April, I had my personal HVAC person come in, and he said the same thing, that it would take thousands upon thousands to fix the systems that we have in there now. And even to identify specifically what the problems were would cost a lot of money. But he's my guy, I was able to pay him at a discount, and then a donor was willing and paid for that.
And then on the telerep, so do we know about how many, because it sounds like we really mitigated a lot of costs there. We dropped quite a bit in expenses. Do you know about how many volunteers it took to, you know, kind of influence that number in the way that you have?
The bulk
maybe
of our,
it'd be nice to know, you know, going forward, kind of as we put calls out for people, you know, what that kind of savings would be. If we have 5, if we have 10, you know, kind of where we're at. But go ahead.
Thank you, Kamal. The major issue is that on Saturday and Sunday is when we get the bulk of the calls. Starting Saturday, you know, 5-6 o'clock in the morning till Saturday, 9 o'clock is when the most phone calls come in on Saturday. On Sunday, most of the calls start coming in about 8:30 Sunday morning till about 8 o'clock Sunday evening. And then after that, it slows down. But even having one person, sometimes Sabu is there by himself on Sunday evening, and he takes a call and it mitigates a lot of the numbers. So you ask specifically for the number of people, it goes throughout the course of the day of the weekend. So on each weekend, if we had at least 10 to 12 people and, you know, who could do shifts, again, it's most intense earlier in the day and then it drops off. But I know Sabu was there late, one of those evenings, and he could handle a lot of the calls that come in because they come in sporadically. Mm-hmm. So I would say if I were to give a number, I would say maybe 12 people each day throughout, you know, from covering that period from 8:30 to 8:30 each day. Mm-hmm. There were 12 people, you know, break that so that no, you know, one or two people have to stay there for 5 or 6 hours, but, you know, 2 hour shifts. And they, I mean, people come in who come in Sunday morning, they usually do a solid 4 to 5 hour shift. And then some of them stay for, after I leave too, but the bulk of the money comes in waves. And same thing during James Funk. He appreciates me pitching with him, but more importantly, he gets so many calls in the studio early in the morning. They get a lot of in studio calls. So he likes me just to be able to take those calls. And, cause those people are just used to doing that. We have to train them to call the other number, but meanwhile, it saves us a significant amount of money. So thank you for that.
I see Tony. Hold on. I got one more question on, I had something I wanted to ask. Go ahead, Tony, and I'll come back. I see your hand, Tony, then Sabu.
Okay, real quick. Miyuki, I see the pledge drive tally. It looks like it is receiving pledges. Are you aware?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah,
how... money comes in consistently.
Okay. And so how is that? Is that money counted if it's not fund, if it's not in fund drive? If we're not in fund drive, how is that money?
There's an actual spreadsheet for non-pledge drive, September, for example. So the money is non-pledge drive Sunday. It just accounts for the money that comes in. Someone may have missed the pledge drive. Someone may have heard something they really like. Someone may have gotten a bonus or something. They just want to give us money. That comes in consistently. Oh, and the other thing, by the way, we had about 20% of the money that came in was, bill me's, and there were significant, like, large amounts of money, $1,000, $500. Those bill me, everything went out, by the Saturday of the end of the drive. So a lot of the bill me checks are starting to come in now.
Okay. So the goals that are on here on the pledge tally, those are not real goals.
Those
like
are,
right now it's 3,944, 9.9%. And the current show has $46 to go. That's not. Hard. Those are not hard numbers then.
When you say hard numbers, I mean, I'm looking at the tally sheet now. For example, Ellen got $1,000 pledge from someone named David Schwartz, and it came in recently or before this came in. So that's why you see that total at the top, $3,944, which is 9 point. And look all the way over to the left. The goal for the money coming in is $40,000, perhaps through the course of the month. So they're not hard. No one is pitching or actually going for those specific goals, but that's just a way to keep a tally of how much comes in between.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So are we saying that the tally, that the system we have, in order for it to record a donation, we have to actually say there's a goal, and in that way it'll function? Okay. Got it. Sabu, go ahead.
Yeah, the Blues Festival, you know, that ran into some serious problems, you know. I don't even think we even covered cost. Do y'all get a final figure? And the other thing was the, the Blues Festival, that was one thing. Yeah, well, I'm having a senior moment. Could you give me the situation with the Blues Festival? I know that they say that you were out there. You must have did, you know, like Zorro thing. You was in and out. I said, where is she at? And so, that took a hit. I know there was some final tallies. I was curious as to, I'm almost sure we were in the hold. And so, how bad was it? You know, in that sense, and in the future, you know, that's going to be something that maybe, the station or staff adds to their, you know, their things to do, you know, outreach does that, but, there's some things that financially, we do have a budget, outreach has a budget for you come out. So we're putting that together. So Violetta is going to give that to you, I don't know if before the meeting or what's what, but I did talk to them. So they put everything together, all the functions, town hall, 5K, the Blues Festival question, town hall, stuff like that. And, you know, figured out. And so they're going to submit that to you because I know that you told us you wanted that so that we could put it in for this. So it'd be ready. We would have it for next year. Is that correct? Is that still going on?
Are you asking?
Yeah. No. I got it. Yeah, that's correct, Sabu, and I appreciate that. Yeah, we're asking all the committees for any impact that a fundraiser would have on the station to identify those costs so that we can make sure they get into the budget.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of answering your question, Sabu, it's a very good question. Yes, I was there. I also had to, Bill Wax was not in on that Saturday and Scooter was doing his show and I had to get back. I had promised to pitch with him, so I couldn't stay. So that's why I had to just come in there and check it out and then leave. But mm-hmm. basically, the Blues Festival, lost money. I don't know how much it lost. I can tell you exactly. I'll know better. Hopefully by tomorrow, by the,
morning meeting.
Yeah, by the meeting on Wednesday. But basically, there was a lot of different, you know, the perfect storm of negative factors that happened. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying there was a lot of stuff going on that day.
Right. Well, the thing is, normally or in the past, the Blues Festival is the second Saturday of the month. Having it on the last Saturday of the month is a huge difference because the last Saturday in the month connects with the Labor Day weekend and also people leaving town for their kids for college and all those kinds of things. The other thing is Lamont sold Lamont's during that period. So there was confusion within the listening audience of, you know, whether Lamont's is supposed to be there or not. There are people who normally would just stop by and go. Did not do so because they were confused about whether it was opened or not. Mm-hmm. The other thing is...
And the distance has always been an issue there.
That's always been the same. That hasn't changed. The factor where it is has always been the same. But there was also, for the first time, Robin had laid down specific rules, they were not adhered to in terms of what was conveyed to the musicians. And they had to be paid a money that in the past that was not written out in that manner. And they got paid were significant. So it did not lose tons of money, Sabu, but it did lose. It didn't make any money. So maybe a lot, I want to say I don't want to, you know, give you the wrong number or anything, but that probably, you know, it didn't break even, but it was a little bit, maybe $400 to $500. It cost us about $400 to $500 maybe. I had to pay the music. Usually in the past, they could pay from the proceeds from the door and there was not enough to pay for things at the door or anything. But there were a lot of, I'm sorry?
So the door didn't cover it?
No.
T-shirts. That did a little bit and Eventbrite didn't bring a lot of stuff in either. So we were, you know, short up front, you know.
Well, the Eventbrite, I paid, extra to advertise it in other places like Pennsylvania and, West Virginia, hoping to get different crowds. One of the part of the feedback that I got was that the lineup wasn't as strong as it's been in the past either. So there were a lot of different factors, I think, that contributed to it not doing well at all. I know that in the past, Mrs. Turner has supplied LSB members with tickets to sell. She didn't do it this time. She didn't have a lot of confidence in that, but,
the board.
I'm sorry.
She's not on the board anymore. She used to do that when she was
right. But she said, but I understand, but that's one of the things that came up and I asked her, you know, could you provide the board with tickets so that each board, your 22 members sell 5 or 10 tickets? That would have been significant. And she said that the track record had not been strong enough for her to go ahead and try to do that. So again, there was various issues that contributed to the fact that it was not the strongest blues festival ever.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Any more questions for Miyuki?
Thank you.
All right. Seeing none. Thank you. All right. Let's go ahead and move forward. One of the things that I wanted to tackle tonight on our agenda is budget preparation. I've been asking our national, really the Pacifica National Office, just for some details in and around the general ledger activity for the last couple of years. As you all know, we had a company couple of years back called Netta that was operating as the CFO essentially for the organization, and they were capturing a lot of what the station was doing, a lot of what the stations, including us, were doing, and of course still using the accounting systems, or at least trying to get what they were recording into our general ledger system. For us, and I feel like we as a committee have talked about this, for us to kind of accurately and really, you know, reasonably produce a budget, we have to understand a little bit more about what has happened in the past in terms of the activity for the station, get some of those details, and then we could go ahead and produce something that the station management, they could rely on in terms of the budget for the year. Now, so one of those things I was hoping to kind of ferret out was both some ideas around fundraising. And the point of tonight is to get some ideas around fundraising. I know we have particular line items on the profit and loss statement, but one of the things that we were kind of doing as a group a couple of weeks ago, maybe this was last middle of last month, was kind of doing like an estimate, like we'll just kind of gross up the revenue a little bit and say that we'll make 2.5% more than the prior year. But what would be really helpful for us, and it you know, time is of the essence here, but what would be really helpful for us is to kind of determine what activities, you know, truly make up all of what's coming into the station. And then what ideas can we produce that would, we feel like, generate some additional funds for the station? I think if we could nail some of that down, kind of talk about that, and then move down to the expenses. I was hoping Miyuki might stay on. I don't know if she left or not. Looks like she might have. Oh, no, she's here. Okay, good. What I would like to try and do is take some ideas from the committee and begin to kind of cobble together something that would at least undergird and support the numbers that we would then have to run past our local station board and, of course, up through the finance committee and the PMB. So one of the things that stands out to me, and we kind of highlighted this on the profit and loss statement, was around underwriting for the station. And that's a stream of revenue that really has not, you know, been capitalized on very much at all. In fact, you know, we've really just started trying to put together some of the pieces, nationally around underwriting and, what it takes to kind of, you know, generate that revenue. What we need to do to kind of extend ourselves to actually get folks to underwrite shows, station in general, so on and so forth. Any thoughts from the committee on underwriting and its viability, its, you know, ways in which we can do some outreach, to produce a little bit more underwriting? And I don't know, if that lies in the realm, and I'll ask Miyuki, of the program director, or would that be something that would kind of touch your desk as well? Probably would have to, but I'd like to get some ideas around underwriting, and you know, maybe we can pass these on to our management. I see a hand, Eileen. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Let me put my video back on. Okay. There we go. Have we worked out a policy at the national level yet on how to do underwriting? You know, what are our limits, or, you know, what we're going to allow and not allow, or things like that? Any policies at all? Do we have guidance for doing this? That's the question.
Yeah, you know, I did see something that came from the executive director. Let me make sure I can forward that. But yes, there should be some policy around underwriting for sure. We would need to, your suggestion is that we want to review that prior to making a determination about how much we could potentially raise. Is that what you're saying to me, I guess?
That would be a reasonable thing. I wasn't saying that, but I wish I had.
no problem. Let me see if I can get it for everybody. Yeah, here we go.
But, you know, I mean, are we going to just ask the, you know, the coffee shop around the corner or, you know, the Kennedy Center in, or,
yeah,
you know, kinds of places? And
yeah, I would say that we, you know, one of the things that I'm trying to recall was in the motion there, but one of the things or the guidance, one of the things was, you know, kind of like-minded organizations, you know, not really, you know, diving into the world of advertising, which we clearly can't do, but working with organizations that have missions very similar to Pacifica and making sure that we're, you know, tied closely to that as a, you know, first thought, you know, before going into the underwriting thing and then working through the executive director, you know, would have to review all these potential agreements. And then from there, you know, of course, properly given the consent decree that's come down, you know, properly airing those, you know, on the broadcast. So, I mean, it's a lot of steps to go through, but it's one of those areas that, you know, is untapped. We're very heavy as a station as right now on, you know, our programmers, you know, just pitching. And there's been this very, very big push currently to do more events. You heard Sabu talking about it and then his committee, you know, working to get some things done, you know, in the next year. So I was feeling like we were leaving some money or at least some ideas on the table, that we really don't want to. And that was my thought around it. Does that make sense? Hopefully. Tony, go ahead.
So, I feel like this is Groundhog Day.
Mm.
Because the station or the local station board drafted a policy for underwriting in 2015. It was called Media WPFW Media Sponsorship and Partnership Policy. Then there was another draft called the Business Donor Policy. So this was drafted and, you know, we had a lot of meetings on this matter. And at the local level, a policy is ready to be implemented. I don't recall if anything on the national level has happened. I think that there was some discussion about it, but I don't know if anything was ever put on paper. But, you know, the station definitely has something ready. The program director has seen it. And I, as I recall, I think she was in agreement with it. Jerry was there at the time and I think he was in agreement with it too. And I don't recall what the holdup was, but you know, this is available if, you know, if this wants to be restarted again, I can forward that information to whatever committee is willing to work on it.
Yeah, that goes back some years there, Tony. So yeah, no, I'd appreciate some of that information. As soon as I get what I know has been, from Stephanie and we can kind of square the two, that would be good. Probably that current one now that's come out most recently would probably supersede whatever we did back in 2015. But it's important to have a history as well. So. If you can, it sounds like you have it at your fingertips, the policy.
Yes.
Yeah. If you want to shoot it over to me, as soon as I can get on, my computer here and get what I have over to the committee, we can definitely, you know, share that with management and see if there's some ways in which we can use what we have. I know we have a little bit of we don't have a lot of bandwidth at the station in terms of doing new ventures and things like that, but it'd be nice to at least try to explore, you know, how we could use the underwriting to our advantage to raise some funds. So, okay. Yeah, appreciate that, Tony. He's always got the good history. I see Julie and Nancy. Julie, go ahead.
Yeah. So the PMB did pass, an underwriting motion. I can't put my hands on it right this second, but, and I am not familiar with the 2015, local underwriting thing. I would take a stab and guess that they're not like diametrically opposed. The main reason the PMB passed a underwriting policy was, to encourage stations to accept underwriting, because a lot of people are like, oh no, we should not do that. But, you know, basically our finances are, you know, not pretty enough that we can, you know, say no to underwriting. And so the point was the policy that the PMB, came up with, you know, was sort of fairly carefully drafted in the sense that, you know, kind of like, Kamal was saying earlier, it's, you know, we're not taking money from just anybody. There's some limits on who we can take money for them. And so then the other thing that always has to happen with underwriting is you have to fill out forms to make sure, you know, you have to have a written agreement that says we're going to give this on-air consideration for this payment, right? And so that's the thing that, you know, I think would be, really good to develop. And since I'm not that familiar with the 2015 policy, I don't know what kind of paperwork was involved there. And I think that's been a question for a lot of people, because you hear things on air that sound like they could be like under announcements associated with underwriting. And yet, because we don't separately keep a line on our, you know, a separate accounting line for underwriting, you know, that stuff, who knows where it appears on our, monthly financials, you know what I mean? So that's kind of like it's a great idea. We just need to sort of clean it up. And if Tony Leon can share the 2015 policy with people, you know, I can look for the thing that the PMB passed. And, you know, as all things at Pacifica, I'm sure that it's applied unevenly across the five stations. So that's my two cents on this. Thanks.
No, it's important. Thank you for that. I know the most recent one is out there. So any of us who can get our hands on it, that'd be great. I have Sabu and then Miyuki.
And so, Julie, you said that it was passed, the PNB passed that? That he said it's okay to do underwriting?
I did say that, yes.
Okay, so that's official. So Kamal, you know, based on what I've asked you for the last two or three months, you know, I'm not a big, you know, big baller, but, you know, hey, you know, can I get paperwork for that at this point? You know, this is the third time, man. Come on.
Yeah, I know you've been on it. That's why I brought it up here tonight. And so, a part of the reason. So, you know, we'll definitely, cobble together everything that's available to us and get it vetted, you know, before we disseminate it. But yeah, I think all of us have an idea of some folks who would be great partners for the station and for the network, especially in DC. I mean, it's littered with nonprofits and folks doing kind of activist work that's really important. So yeah, we should really try and do that as part of the fundraising for the station.
Venting, you know, I know there's a venting process, you know, and you know, so yeah, but you know, it's there, you know, so you can touch base with it. Yeah. It's okay, you know. So all right.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tony. I have Miyuki and then Julie again.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind everyone, and I said it was a perfect storm for things not to work out for the Blues Festival. The other major issue is the new compliance issues and the consent decree and the scrutiny that we're under. And so, that made it more difficult for us to promote things like the Blues Festival, like we had done in the past. Oh, I'm going to be there. You're going to come. We can do no call to actions. We cannot talk about things in a certain manner. Similarly, with whatever may have been constructed in 2015, it'll have to go under the rubric or have to under review of whatever the current compliance things are. That being said, there are things that we do run and that we are starting to do some of those things. So thank you. I appreciate the historical institutional knowledge that Tony always has in bringing up all these different things. I think we should review and continue moving forward with it. But just to let you know, it's just not an instant, thing that's going to be able to be implemented it has to go under, we have to give it to John, make sure he reviews it, make sure it's okay. And then we can go from there. So, I appreciate the suggestion. Absolutely. We have to do more of those type of things, but compliance issues are very, very serious right now. Also, our license is coming up for renewal. So that's another concern that John has in terms of, again, people paying attention to what it is that we do and make sure that we do it correctly.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you for that. Julie and then Tony.
Yeah. Let me just add a little bit to, you know, this conversation in the sense of, you know, when we do events, they take a lot of labor. Mm. And I worry, you know, an upfront planning and follow through. And I sometimes worry about relying on events they're great for the station in terms of bringing people together. Don't get me wrong. I'm not anti-event, but I think we have to find the right balance just because, you know, events, sometimes people's eyes are bigger than their stomachs, right? When it comes to like the buffet. And I think that sometimes happens with events. People are like super excited at the outset of the planning, and then their energy wanes. And that's what we can't afford to do, because that's, you know, what leads to events not making a lot of money, right? Whereas when it comes to underwriting, right, I'm not saying we're selling our soul here, but it's like we have airwaves. And so, you know, I mean, subject to what Miyuki said about, you know, we have to make sure that we're not introducing any compliance issues here, but assuming that we can find the right kind of, firms and groups and nonprofits with, you know, aligned interests that, you know, they have a need to to get some message out and we can make it work in a way that, is compliant with all the FCC rules. It's so easy to just put something on the air, right? That's not taking us out of our comfort zone at all. You know, the kind of thing it does is it means you play, you know, one less song every hour or two, you know what I mean? And so that's it's a small trade-off there. And that's the sense in which I feel like we need to have people who are kind of working on this underwriting thing, right? And there's other kinds of things that we can do, you know, that are very different, but they take labor of a different sort, you know, things like, you know, the car donation. I mean, that's playing PSAs, but it's also trying to convince people, you know, there's other things like that, but that's my point is really, you know, we have the wherewithal to do the underwriting and that, you know, that doesn't involve looping in listeners as much other than, you know, them still passively as listeners, you know, and that's the thing that events can do is they can bring listeners together, which is always a fabulous thing. So anyway, that's my other two cents. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I think the operative word there is passive. I mean, one of the financial planning gurus, I mean, all of them will probably tell you that's the best kind of income. So, you know, the less amount of labor we have to extend and, you know, put energy into, the better. And of course, those relationships stay intact, you know, through change in administration and different things like that. You would hope that, you know, all that would stay connected with the station. So it's not just kind of immediate money coming in, but it's also that kind of sustained, networking that we, you know, the station really needs to maintain. So I think this is an opportunity, you know, for us, which is why, I appreciate everybody, you know, chiming in here. So Tony and go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to assure everybody that when the local policy was drafted, the consideration for following FCC rules was at the top of the list. And the second thing that was close to the top of the list was who we would accept money from and who we wouldn't accept money from. So you'll see that in the draft. And I just saw a document from 2018 when I was on the national board and I was on the strategic planning committee that underwriting was also part of that fundraising plan too. So definitely, following the rules is at the top of the list. Just like NPR has been doing it for years. You know, I listen to them and they follow the rules strictly on what to say and what not to say. And I never could understand why we just couldn't, you know, do the same thing. Cause we already, you listen to some of the programs and they're already promoting, you know, events. Mm-hmm. And so all we have to do is get the programmers to tighten it up, make it legal. And then, as a matter of fact, there was a rate chart created, within the station. I saw a rate chart. So that's there too. We get the businesses to, agree to the rate chart, and it wasn't unreasonable, as I can recall. And then we use that as another source of revenue. So I'll send everything that I have.
Yeah. No, that's perfect. Thank you. All right, switching gears a little bit, but staying on revenue. And I was, I'm glad Miyuki's still here because I think this is a wheelhouse that over the last couple of years that I've been associated with the board, this kind of major donor income line has always been a bit of a challenge, for us as a committee to understand. And then also it's been a challenge, I guess, specifically for the station to actually raise the funds that are associated with this kind of major donor income. The definition as it states here is anyone who's given to the station $1,000 or more within the year. So in actuality, a major donor could become a major donor, sometime in October, if they're giving $100 a month or something like that. So you're not really categorizing them as a major donor until November, December. It's like a reclass has to be done. But I'm more interested in kind of talking about what kind of major donors we could go after. And again, just kind of thinking of the environment in which we are, Washington, D.C., it's a lot of, this is where the Treasury is. And so a lot of folks still listening and checking in. And I feel like there's an opportunity there as well. And I know Miyuki feels this way. I just want to kind of get maybe her thoughts on, major donors. And then also from the, from the committee, what is it that, working with management, working with the board, soliciting people to get on the board that have, these particular associations that, we might be able to benefit from, that we could push that major donor line up, in the coming years. It may not be necessarily something, in fiscal 25 that would show, but at least something that we could begin to build again, that kind of solid trough of, major donors. So did you have any thoughts on that, Miyuki, around major donors and kind of, how to cultivate that, or what were you thinking?
Yeah, we are doing exactly that right now. When I started back in April, I asked Craig Williams, and he volunteered actually, to handle that portion of fundraising for me. As you know, we have not had a development director for over 9 years. And so there's nobody who's been actively courting major donors, which is a time consuming job. He, has started the Jazz and Justice Circle, in which he has identified over 200 plus members who've given over $1,000 either individually at one time or through the course of the year. And he's going to have the first Zoom conference next week. One of the perks of being a major donor is that you have direct access to the GM and the program director. So we're going to start. That's in a couple of weeks. We have the first one of those. He on his own, God bless him, has bought little swag, t-shirts, little bracelets, some things that those major donors get. In addition to just a thank you letter, I have written those major donors from the last couple drives, make sure that I let them know that I appreciate their additional patronage of WPFW. But others, Craig, make sure that each of those people receive a specific letter. Also with the major donors, Craig has just been incredible, just identifying those people and trying to service them. Because I had one person who's a major donor who told me candidly saying that you all are not that good on the thank yous. She said she gives so much more money to us than she does to her alma mater, UDC. But UDC, a student will call and say, thank you so much for making it possible for me to have this education. And we barely say anything to them. So Craig individually on his own is doing a major effort in turning that around. The other person, you talk about this whole thing about planned giving as well. Arthur Hyland, who is on the board, has been instrumental in instituting our planned giving program. And we had our first bequest last week, which we're thrilled about. And again, those things take time to develop. Earlier, Nancy was saying something about, did we go on air asking people for a free place to live when we were looking for a place. We didn't do that. But as we speak to these people, we say we asking if they want to leave their homes or those other things to us. There was a gentleman who called me after we had already identified narrowed down our chances of places we'd like to stay. I said, well, are you going to charge us for it? Are you going to lease it to us? Are you going to give it to us for free? He said, no, he's going to lease it to us. Well, I said, well, then maybe just leave it to us in our will or something, which he just laughed about. But at least I planted the seed. Hopefully in the future, he'll do that type of thing. But we have three major donor carts going on now that the drive is over. I think you've heard them. One, the car donations. You have no idea how those little car donations just make my week on a weekly basis. There'd be just one or two car donations that come in. It's $1,000 or $2,000 that makes that week's deposits just so much more. I'm so gratified to get those. And people think nothing of it. So they contribute a car, they leave the car. And it's huge for us. So we have the car donation going on. Craig is asking for people to join the Jazz and Justice Circle. I actually had someone who called and said they want to give $1,000 so they can join the Jazz and Justice Circle. So that is also working. And then the other thing is, Tom Cole has the planned giving PSA going on. And people, again, that man called last week and said he wanted to give us a bequest. He said he wants to give us half. I don't know how much he has. He hasn't gotten that specific or anything. And I don't want him to go anywhere. But we are starting those things. We're never implemented. Again, without a development director, the staff is eight people who are on staff. And then you have Katia Sid, who's program director, and you have myself. It's very – we need an infusion of work. I think the whole thing about the underwriting is critical and could be a big boon for us. But while you're saying all these things, I said, who can I get, who has enough time to keep a record of all those things, to track all those people, to court those people who's currently on staff. And right now there is, I'll have to identify someone like Kurt, like Craig or like Arthur, or someone else to do those kind of that kind of work, because the staff of eight people for a 50,000-watt radio station, which with 137 volunteers, is spread very, very thin, very, very thin, and we need more help. If hiring, putting Craig on board was one of the best decisions I made, because he retired and he has a lot of energies and he's smart as a whip and he knows how to do these things, because he's a major donor of WPFW as well as many other things. But we need elbow grease and we need a hard work. Then I'm working on developing those things. But meanwhile, sure. That's where we are with that. Did I answer the question?
Yeah, no. In terms of what the committee here can do, myself just, being on the board, to me, I feel like the board, is kind of lacks somewhat quite a bit in this area as well that, you know, we should try and, you know, and I'm pointing the finger at myself. So then we should try to come to the table in terms of being on the board with the idea that, hey, if I can't do it personally, you know, I'd like to contribute X amount of dollars, you know, for the year or something like that, you know, kind of almost asking board members, you know, to be major donors, you know, give that $1,000 annually, in, you know, over the 12-month period. And, you know, you're talking what 25 board members, you know, you're talking, you know, $25,000, you know, annually, you know, just from the board. So kind of just trying to implement, you know, that thought process with the board. And how do you feel like the board could assist with some of these or the committee, I'll say, since we're in the finance committee, can assist you in some of these major donor ventures, you know, like cultivating. I know Craig's working, things like that. I mean, do people need, you know, I don't know, letters written? Does someone need spreadsheets to track information? You know, like, and I know you don't have to answer now, but I mean, just, you know, kind of thinking about, you know, what tasks that are out there that maybe, you know, someone from this committee could actually assist with.
I'll think about that. I'll think about that. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's switch gears real quick. I know we're at 8:40 and I want to talk expenses. I just heard Miyuki say that there are 8 staff members. We kind of put together a budget. I cannot share my screen tonight. I apologize. I'm on my phone, so I'm not able to share with you kind of where we left off. But that's pretty much yes, sir. Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it. We came up with a budget for, essentially overall total salaries and related expenses line item, for the year. And it was based on the 8 people. So we were pretty spot on with that. I'm sorry. It was 10 total staff members. 8 from what Miyuki said, plus the GM and, program director. There were a few things on the rest of this budget that we hadn't gotten to yet. We did do the administrative costs. We did an estimate there, a projection, I'll call it there. And then programming expenses, which this is part of the reason why I'm kind of requesting some of the information for or from our national office is that we have some numbers in here and just, you know, me personally knowing how accounting works and just, you know, the, you know, stuff that you think is a travel cost ends up in, you know, marketing or travel cost ends up in, you know, for some odd reason in the salary line, you know, so on and so forth. And so what I'm noticing in my experience is that a lot of this stuff, you know, needs to be looked at so that you can kind of really classify your activity properly. Once you get that proper classification, then you can really determine, is this something that we need to continue doing? So for example, kind of going back to the Verizon bill that, Miyuki spoke about, that Verizon bill, you know, hey, what exactly is it supporting? Is it programming? Is it administrative? So on and so forth. And a lot of what our executive director did for us last year, kind of in a pinch, was to really try and allocate that out. And we're trying to take that a step further and really say, okay, yeah, we think 20% here, you know, 30% there. But, you know, really start to understand, the workings of the business so that we can, properly budget our activities. And so that's what we're kind of waiting on. So I'm hoping to get that information as soon as possible, from the national office. I'll pause right there. Were there any questions or concerns about, what we discussed so far? All right, hearing none. Let's go ahead then and take any questions. Let's open the floor because I do apologize. I can't share my screen. I really want to make sure we see the general ledger. The financial statements as they stand. We have a March, year to date statement that we've been working from to get to annualized numbers for fiscal 25. And so we're kind of sitting on the last piece of it, which is the programming and then the development expenses. Central services is still a discussion going on at the national office or national level as well. So as soon as that, gets kind of worked out, we'll be able to budget for that as well. We do have a deadline coming up. So, our fiscal year is going to end on the 30th. October 1 begins fiscal 25. So as you all know, the finance committee meets only once a month and the LSB is only once a month. So at this point, in order for us to really get something up to the finance committee, working with management, we'd have to have something done, basically 2 weeks from now on the 23rd. And then we could hold a, kind of special meeting with the LSB to talk about the approval at the LSB level and then move it forward so that the finance committee could actually get something, close to the 30th, kind of right under the wire. So do we have anybody who's kind of willing to continue to work on this in the next couple of weeks, kind of meeting? And I'm just going to say each Monday for the next couple of weeks to get, the final numbers complete. And again, we'll be able to share screens and kind of work, from the documentation that we have. Does anybody have any bandwidth for that? You can email me. You don't have to answer up now, but, please email me and let me know, if you've got the time. I'll get with, if Miyuki's still on, she is on. I'll get with her and Stephanie and see if we can fold them into, the discussion as well. Eileen, I got your hand. Go ahead.
Yeah, a couple of things. Number one, have you gotten any response from Markeisha or Stephanie on our actually getting access to the general ledger info? Have they responded at all? Yes, no, can't, maybe. And the other question was, I think the budget is, isn't it sort of nearly done?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's pretty close based on some of the estimates we've done. And no, there hasn't been a yes or a no, just, kind of crickets right now. So, I understand everybody's busy. So I'll be patient, but, I have not heard back from them. I have not heard back as a response to my email. I know in the National Finance Committee meeting, Stephanie said it was okay to reach out to Markeisha and request the information. So, that's kind of where we're at. So just kind of waiting.
But you have reached out to her? To Markeisha?
I've got a second email out. So I had one request. So I've made a second request. The second request was earlier today. The first request was about a month or so ago. So
is there anybody at WPFW now who has access to Great Plains?
Not that I know of. No.
Right. Okay.
No. Yeah. I don't think nobody's using that at, the station. And yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure the inner workings there. So we got to kind of figure out, cause I know, Eileen, we kind of had this discussion before and it's kind of ebbed and flowed in terms of how we're going to actually, if we're actually ever going to use Great Plains locally. Right. And I'm not even sure if that is a software that will be used going forward. So, that would also have to be discussed, I guess, at the national level, but yeah. No one's ever used it that I can tell. As the former, business manager, administrative assistant used to kind of package, I feel like she said she used to kind of either photocopy or scan in a bunch of stuff and send it up. Yeah. So, and then of course we lost that information and, don't have that. It'd be nice to have that. That way I could actually use that to kind of work backwards, right? To see how she coded, her activity and to see how that would be able to be walked over to the financial statement. It would kind of give us a sense of how things were working, but we don't even have that, you know, so. So it's been a struggle, a little bit of a struggle.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a problem. Like I said, I'll open it up if there's any other questions or concerns, regarding financials. And, I need, you know, anybody on the committee who would like to, you know, work on this on the next two Mondays, I'll work with Eileen to get an email out and just asking for people's time over the next couple of weeks, to really work on kind of completing this budget. And I'll reach out to, you know, management and, the executive director to see what their time frame is. So if you have time, please email me, really email Eileen. She'll coordinate it for our committee and, we'll get the budget done. All right. Hearing nothing else, I think we can adjourn early. It's 8:48 p.m. And I do apologize again, kind of doing double duty there on the committee thing. And I just had some important work on the mass committee, you know, trying to get the new general manager hired for the station. So if that's it, then anybody want to move to adjourn?
Do you have a public comment?
Yeah, I'm taking it now. Please. Anybody who's available, if you would like to comment, please do.
Yes, this is Nancy from KPFT about underwriting.
Yes.
There is a 30-minute show that we have, and the sponsors are five different nonprofits. Baker Ripley, this was a group for women and children since 1900. Boys and Girls Club of Houston, I think. And Children at Risk is a children's group, all about children's education. These are all nonprofit. And Houston Food Bank, and I cannot remember the fifth one. And they pulled their money together, and I think they're giving around $7,000, and they get a 30-minute show. And programmers from these groups interview other small nonprofits. Usually it's two guests in a 30-minute, like 15 minutes for the first nonprofit. And they interview another nonprofit, like a group the other day was helping pregnant women who have low income. And another group would be something about teaching kids environmental in the field, something like that, educational thing. So that's one underwriting project we have at KPFT, and it's palatable because these are not Chevron. These are not oil companies. These are all nonprofits, and you get to hear the voice at least for 15 minutes, another group, and 15 minutes for another small group. So they get something, you know, time there. The other one is I don't like that much, but it's a lawyer, and he gets one little cart. On the day of the prison show, I think it's on Friday. So-and-so has a law firm. He's helped many ex-incarcerated, and we really appreciate his art. Anyway, he's sponsoring $7,500, I think, a year. Okay, and then on the prison show, they will play the same card. So he gets two plays with this kind of NPR-ish, what do you call it? underwriting statement, very short. That's one thing I wanted to tell you. I like that, you know, the first one is palatable. I mean, they do have money. You might want to ask them if they want to do that. The other thing is, you know, KPFK in Los Angeles, I was listening to one of their meetings, and when a bequest comes in, they have a rule that the LSB made that a copy of the canceled check is given to the LSB. And I went, wow.
Wow.
We were never shown anything like that. Why don't we make a rule like that? And we have never been reported about any bequest. But one time 2 years ago, I asked our development director, I said, hey, do we have anybody who's going to leave us in their will? And she said, three. And I said, really? And she said, yes. And I said, gosh, but we've never been told or shown any kind of financial document. That's what I hate about Pacifica. You know, LSB's number one, our duty in Article 7, mm-hmm. Section 3, to review and approve the station's budget, make quarterly reports, which never gets done, to the foundation board directors regarding the station's budget, actual income, and expenditures. We cannot do this because we never see any financial documents. And I've been on the board since 2009, December. Never. I wanted to see just a bank statement. And I got a long, wordy thing like, well, you need to ask your treasurer. Treasurer needs to ask National. National needs to think about it. And if they decide, they'll send it to the general manager. If the general manager wants to do it, they'll send it to the treasurer, and then you can see it. And I said, can't you just show us a bank statement? Why do we have to jump so many hurdles? And then the business manager repeated the first response. I thought I was going crazy, or is this woman crazy? I didn't know, but I got the same response. So we never saw anything in 15 years except one telephone bill. It was June of 2019, $630 telephone bill. That's the only time. I mean, Lyndon Foley was jumping up and down, and he wanted to see the telephone bill. All these newbie LSBs, they come in, and they look at the telephone bill, and they say, oh, we got to make this smaller, you know, because they compare it with their home telephone bill. So, you know, this happens every year. But I was surprised that we saw one financial document. And so anyway, we're not doing our duty, our fiscal duty to our membership who elected LSBs. We're not seeing anything. And now that business manager is you know who. Okay. The next thing. So I think I would encourage you to change the rules because our IGM says that he cannot see anything except he can peek into the bank account, but he cannot see any, you know, everything goes straight to National. So he said the reason why is because I'm an IGM. I said, well, we all have IGMs at all five stations now. And he says, no, if I were a GM, I would be able to see everything. I said, well, we need to change rules and make a new rule because it's not good business practice to have zero local oversight. And look, I'm not a financial person, but the auditor told us, yes, Nancy, we need local oversight at the local, but we need it at the national, and we're not getting it at the national. So right now, let's concentrate on everything going to national. Well, now everything's going to national. But what Eileen just asked, she wanted to see if anybody saw the general ledger. Same question being asked at KPFK.
Right.
So you people have the power. You're on the LSB. Mm-hmm. You elect PNB directors. We need to have a new rule because this is wrong for us to be representing the membership who voted us. We're supposed to have look at duty A through N. There's 13 duties. The first one, how can we know the actual income and expenditures?
Right.
We're not shown anything.
Okay, Nancy, okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy.
I just have
go ahead.
A question that just occurred to me. Jerry mentioned many months in a row that our new HD streams, we would be able to monetize them. Does that sound familiar?
Absolutely.
And I, you know, I just thought of that. I don't know if anybody else has been talking about it, if it's come up in any meetings or anywhere. What's going on with that?
I do not know, Eileen. That's a very good question. I think that was supposed to be several streams of income. I mean, I guess at least two HDs. I think three were established, and two of them were supposed to be strictly for kind of putting, and I think even UDC was mentioned, you know what I mean? Like putting, you know, different folk on air through that HD. So is Miyuki still on? I don't know if she's on still or not.
I don't know if she's listening.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Let's put that question to I think really the chief engineer at this point, obviously Miyuki, but also the chief engineer and the program director, and see if, you know, what the status is. Yeah, I forgot about that. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect.
That's it for me.
Yeah. All right. All right. We're at about time, almost 9 o'clock. So, I thank everybody for the comments, for their time and, input. We will see most of you, hopefully at the our LSB meeting, which is, this Wednesday at, 6:30 PM. So the, meeting is open and, link is on our website. So feel free to join us there. Okay. That's it. And, we'll have a motion to adjourn.
I move to adjourn.
All right. Thank you all much.
Thank you.
A few days. Thank you. Good night. Thanks, Eileen. Appreciate you.
Okay. All right. We start.